this is their pride.
Yeah.
It's like, we're a proud warrior nation. Yeah, I get you're a proud warrior
we're
nation.
We're not afraid.
But we're not afraid of you.
Yeah.
You can bring guns. You can bring all the troops you want. You can bring artillery. It don't matter to us.
Yeah. I'll take a cannon shot. I don't care. But that's the mentality.
Peruse some of the faces from the past. You walked past them many times. I don't think you really looked at them. They're not that different from you, are they?
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Low Bros History Podcast. As always, I'm here with the man, the myth, and the legend,
Jacob Lowe.
Jacob Lowe.
And I'm here with the legendary
Henry Lowe. Is that me? Am I supposed to introduce myself?
Well, you kind of oversold me a little bit, but
no,
you know, I'm not legendary or mythical. But
Jake's mythical. He's mythical to me. But
all right, I'll take it. I needed that today.
Just take the compliment, man.
COVID-19 going on, you know, I needed that today.
We got a blizzard going on outside, but we're gonna rev it up today.
We're gonna power through.
We're gonna power through, and today we're gonna be talking about the legendary Zulu tribe
of Africa
and the imperialism of England and the engagements that they had against the Zulus during the height of the imperialistic era, conquering Africa.
How the Zulus just kicked the British butt.
Yeah.
Trying to keep a PG in here, but, you know.
Kick their butts.
Just kick their butt.
Yeah.
You know, ironically, it is Black History Month.
That's
so
true.
We didn't plan.
Yeah, this was
on
not
this.
Planned. So, basically, the Zulus were an underestimated opponent of the British. The British thought this was going to be a wash, and then it ended up lasting a six-month campaign to try to conquer Zululand.
Try to conquer it. And for a long time, they actually did resist the British from 1840s to 1870s.
Yeah.
Just, you know, kicking butt and taking names.
Yeah, we're going to get into why the English wanted to conquer Zululand and how the Zulus were so successful at repelling the British for such a long time.
Yeah.
So basically, we're going to start out like we always do with our icebreaker question.
Okay.
Jake had a great one. I'll let him pop it off.
All right.
What you got?
Greatest military defeat in history, in your opinion?
The greatest military defeat in history. Based off what we've talked about before, I told you this, but I'm going to go with the Battle of Gallipoli.
Okay.
In World War I with Winston Churchill.
Yeah.
Basically because it was one of those things that you go into thinking that you have it all together, and then it ended up turning into a complete military disaster for Britain and for Winston Churchill, really, and for his reputation for the rest of his life, losing all those men that day. And I think Gallipoli is a really awesome representation of failure, you know, and what overcoming failure, and how Winston Churchill, he didn't let that failure haunt him for the rest of his life, even though it most likely did. Even though it haunted him for the rest of his life, he didn't let that stop him from bouncing back and coming through in World War II and still being the bulldog that we know.
Oh yeah.
But you know, failure or success is going from failure to failure without a loss of enthusiasm. And that was Gallipoli. That was a big failure. I think that's definitely one of the most underestimated opponents. You know, I mean, they thought that they had the intel to invade the Ottomans, and the Ottomans really just were so dug in and drove them out.
Yeah. Partially because the Germans were backing them too.
Right, right.
So, but you know, back then you didn't
hiding
have
in Big Daddy's pocket.
You know, back then you didn't have cell phones. You can just call up and, hey man, what's the intel? And I'm like, but
next time we're gonna do this podcast just with Al Pacino voices.
Yeah, dude,
just with Al Pacino. Hooah! Yeah, baby. Oh yeah. Hooah!
Well, for me, the greatest military defeat in history would be the Battle of Waterloo.
The Battle of Waterloo.
Napoleon's last great battle before he was eventually just...
Yeah. And, went kaput, just
yeah,
dished really, him back really out quick. To exile.
I mean, greatest comeback in history, not the greatest forward thinker.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know?
Kind of let his ego get ahead of him yeah. on that one.
You know, it's like, you know, you got a great swing on the golf course, but you got no follow through.
Right.
So,
you got a great swing, but it's just falling apart, pal.
Yeah, but that would be one of the greatest military defeats in history, in my opinion.
It's definitely up there with one of the greatest military defeats of all time.
You know, simply because his Grand Armée was, like, he committed his Grand Armée.
Right.
Most veteran troops, they still got demolished.
Yeah, well, like we were talking about in, I believe it was the Hannibal podcast that is out now, mm-hmm. The Great Enemy of Rome.
Mm-hmm.
Should check it out. But Jake has a excellent reciting of the Battle of Alamo, the Alamo movie with Dennis Quaid.
Oh, yeah.
Where Dennis Quaid, who plays Samuel Houston, mm-hmm. talks about the Battle of Waterloo and how the Duke of Wellington... led Napoleon into a trap.
It's a trap.
Yeah. So check it out. But
check it out.
Anyway.
But without further ado, we're going to get into the topic for today.
Let's get into the topic of today. I'm pumped about this one, Jake.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And like I said, we didn't plan on it, but kind of coincides with Black History Month.
Yeah.
Shaka Zulu.
Yeah, his name will be brought up throughout the pod. But
Zulu meaning sky. And how he was just really able to reform
the military and reform their whole, basically
culture,
their whole culture
really.
And lifestyle.
Well, I mean, culture is a bit of a stretch, but society.
Society. How about
society
that? Civilization.
Because, like, they already had a culture. Like,
yeah.
I'm not trying to take away anything.
Yeah, but the English were. The Brits, they went down to South Africa. Everybody was trying to take a piece of the pie mm-hmm. of that was Africa during imperialism, the imperialistic era.
And this is around when the Zulu, it's known as the Anglo-Zulu War, and it takes place around 1877 to 1879.
So about 3 years.
And at this point, in European imperialism... Or I guess European colonialization of the continent of Africa was in full swing.
Full-fledged.
Everybody was taking a piece. And there's this really great political cartoon that you can look up on, really, Google. But it shows a British man, a French man, a German man, you know. And then it shows the continent of Africa like a piece of pie.
Right.
And they all got their carving knives, just carving out a little piece for themselves.
Yeah.
Because of the resources that were found there.
Yeah. You mind listing off a couple of those resources that were so appealing to Africa?
Rubber, diamonds, ivory, gold.
Everything but the kitchen sink. Huh?
Everything but the kitchen sink. to put it into like more modern terms, tungsten steel.
Oh, yeah.
And you're probably like, well, what does tungsten steel have to do with anything? Well, it holds an electric charge. Well, why does that matter? Well, it's the same thing that they put in your cell phone.
Same thing they put in your iPhone, idiot. No, I'm just kidding.
But,
we're having an argument with ourselves.
Yeah.
So it's got an electric charge, and it goes on our cell phones.
Yeah, it goes in your cell phone. That, and like, you can look it up, too. I mean, there's like five different materials that make up an iPhone.
Really?
And all originate from Africa.
Wow.
And that's kind of like the sad thing is...
Africa's kind of been
cursed with a lot of natural wealth.
Yeah.
And cursed with people wanting to seek that.
Right.
Because it's like...
greed and all the important resources that just drew all these European nations to just really ravage the nation.
Yeah, and it's like... you know, even today, I walk, you know, around and talk to people and talk about Africa, and they're like, oh, that's a country, the country of Africa.
Yeah, it's a continent.
And it's like, it's a continent, man. Like, it's got a lot of different countries in it, and each is different from the last. So
yeah, I really actually I've been it's really a beautiful cotton. I've actually wanted to go visit it one day.
And it's kind of sad because through colonialism, a lot of those natural resources that they had access to are pillaged.
Yeah. So they're non-renewable. Now, they just they've all been mined, gone, done. And we talked about how poaching is a huge thing in Africa right now too. The elephant tusk trade,
rhinoceros tusks. Yeah.
Very crazy stuff.
And a lot of that funds wars, genocide, terrorism.
Yeah, like the Rwanda genocide. Is that that was? I remember hearing about Darfur or something like that. But I don't know.
Yeah,
a little off topic.
It's just kind of like something that like a war springs up wherever a natural resource is found. And of course, human nature takes hold.
Right.
And you're just like, just grab it all up.
Yeah.
But honestly, it really did set back a lot of countries from imperial colonialism.
Really? Because, I mean, there's a lot of places.
Because it's like if you were to come to the United States, right?
Take everything we have.
Foreign invader and just take everything we have.
We'd be blasted
natural
back.
Natural gas, oil.
Yeah, blasted back to the snow.
And then we're stuck for so many years. And it's probably going to take X amount of years to
even recover from all
that. To even recover.
Yeah.
But it's like, well, if we just left it the way it was, and maybe a lot of
if we all were nice to each other. And
yeah. And again, that goes in with human nature.
Right.
I mean, human nature is human nature.
Right. It is what it is.
Doesn't matter who you are, but
yeah, so, you know,
anyway,
the British, they set up base camp in South Africa, Cape Town specifically.
Yeah.
And they also have a interest in Natal, which borders Zululand.
Yeah, Natal was actually a... so, a little bit of history. The British actually went to war with the Boers. And the Boers are descendants of 17th century Dutch slavers.
Right.
And they went to war with them. And actually, the first recorded use of concentration camps happened during the Boer Wars.
That's right.
Where they, you know, sorry, that's my phone. They were concentrating these people. You know, a concentration camp is a concentration camp.
Right.
Like,
yeah. I mean, it
may not be as brutal as the Nazis, but it's still like, hey, man, what the...
How
are you doing?
You're like, taking control over people beyond their will.
Their will, exactly. So,
interesting.
Yeah. So, if you look at the Boer Wars, that's the first known example of concentration camps. A lot of people may not know that. You say concentration camp, you think Nazi Germany.
Nazi Germany, the Holocaust.
But it actually had its roots farther back than we think.
Interesting. Little tidbit of information on that.
Yeah.
So basically, the British are trying to find a motive to get into Zululand and to invade Zululand. So do you want to go ahead and detail maybe some of those motives for Zululand?
Yeah, so Britain has basically taken over a lot of South Africa. Cape Town is their base of operations.
Right.
And Sir Henry...
Henry, good name.
Good name.
Good name.
Good name. Good king. Good king.
Good king. Lots of English kings were Henry.
But some of them Sir good, Henry...
Some of them not.
Frere was Britain's colonial ambassador and was sent to Cape Town with a task of forming a British confederation.
That's right.
And uniting all of the, you know, uniting the Boer Republic, African states, and British colonies under one umbrella.
Right, and the Zulus were getting in the way of that.
Yeah, but it proved to be difficult because the Zulus, who are, at the time, the largest ethnic... I mean, well, not even at the time. I mean, if you go to South Africa now...
are there still, like, Zulu tribes?
Descendants.
Zulu descendants?
Yeah.
Wow.
And just to give you an idea of what I mean by the largest ethnic tribe in Africa, It was 9 million people.
9 million.
Yeah, 9 million.
Back in like 1870 something.
Yep.
So there was a couple of reasons why their population was so vast, right?
Yeah, yeah. They practiced polygamy. Not trying to throw any stones, because here in Utah they still practiced freaking polygamy.
Oh.
So not trying to throw any stones, but they practiced polygamy. But also, they had a tradition of when a wife was widowed, they would vet the next.
So basically,
the descendant of the family,
right?
And then in honor of the deceased, they would have as many children as they could,
right?
So,
yeah, I know, that's really crazy. So they did remarry widows and stuff like that, and there was like a system in place, you know.
Yeah.
So it added a lot to that vast population.
Yeah. And just to give you an idea of who the Zulu were, think of ancient Sparta,
yeah,
but in South Africa.
So really like a warrior nation.
Yeah, they prided themselves in being great warriors, but also raising and training great warriors
And this all really started with Shaka Zulu's military reforms, correct?
Yeah. Because, I mean, in the beginning, they were grain farmers, tended a couple of cattle, and whenever, like, one of those cattle die, they just steal more.
Right.
Because, you know, white people just coming in there and, you know, really screwing things over. And then Shaka came along and really, like I said, not, like, give them, they already had a culture, but like formed the society that we know as the Zulu now, looking back.
Right, right.
Highly militaristic, very prideful warriors. And their whole society revolves around the protection of their king.
Okay.
And also the protection of Zulu land.
Right.
Which, I mean, any soldier anywhere in the world,
yeah, I mean,
can understand that. It's really universal.
Right.
So
anybody can get behind that kind of thinking.
Yeah, exactly.
So he brought together these military reforms, though, and at the same time that we were talking about the other day, the Zulu, how they used to fight, they used to have the long spears that they would throw at each other.
Yes.
Right? And then Shaka came along and really he shortened the spear.
Yeah.
And used it now, so now it becomes not only a stabbing weapon in a like projectile, but it becomes almost like a sword and a spear at the same time.
Yeah.
So he cut that spear in half, then it became very highly mobile.
Yeah.
You know, you can slash and stab.
Yeah. And, you know, the Zulu weren't unfamiliar with firearms either.
Right.
Because they had been resisting the British since the 1840s.
Right.
So they were familiar with firearms, but it took so long for those to reload those firearms that they just kind of foregoed them altogether.
Yeah, and we were talking about how the Native Americans back in the colonialization of America, how they basically kind of did away with muskets and stuff. They could have had muskets, right?
Yeah.
But they really prided themselves on their warrior mentality and the ambush tactics and the hit and run, you know, kind of aspect of it. They were very fast and very, although the Zulu weren't very hit and run, which we'll talk about.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later.
Okay.
Their whole identity was, we're proud warriors.
Right.
So when the British first invaded Zululand, they were thinking like, oh, they're just going to do hit and run tactics.
Right. That
was not the case. They actually marched out and faced them
head on. Yeah. It's kind of crazy. It kind of reminds me a little bit of the Gurkha warriors that we were talking about, and how they used to be like a farming nation until they were really turned into kind of like some of the most feared warriors in the world.
You know? Yeah. And, you know, so Sir Henry is in charge of all of this, the colonialization. He's the manager of all of it.
Yeah.
And he knows that the Zulu are very tough. So he passes it along. You know, if you're someone who's ever been in the military, it's kind of like highest rank passes down to the next lowest rank. They pass it down to the next lowest rank. They pass it down to the next lowest rank.
Yeah.
And so he enlists the help of the governor of Natal, which is the bordering between Zululand and South Africa at the time.
Right.
And his name is Sir Theophilus Stepstone.
Theophilus Stepstone.
And basically, Sir Henry is like, give me a couple reasons why we should invade Zululand.
Yeah.
Because he knows that London isn't going to want a war. They're too preoccupied with stuff that's already going on at the time.
Right.
And so he begins to list a state, a list of reasons why to invade.
Right.
And he's like, well, they keep crossing the border into Natal.
It's just kind of like making stuff up almost.
Really, yeah. They're crossing the border into Natal, you know, and there's an increasing amount of firearms that are coming into their possession, even though we've already stated they really didn't care.
Yeah.
About firearms, because it was to just forego it altogether.
Right.
It's like, well, if you're like standing there taking 10 minutes to reload a rifle.
Right.
Like, I can just, it just run doesn't, up and stab you. Yeah.
It just doesn't really jive with their fighting style. You know? And I think that's the thing that really blew me away the most, because when we talk about imperialism, we talk about a bigger nation taking over a quote unquote weaker nation.
Yeah.
When in reality, the Zulus had every access to firearms and advanced technology, but they opted for their traditional weapons because mm-hmm. they were more efficient with them.
Yeah.
And they were actually very skilled fighters.
It's the same thing with Native Americans
in
America. They knew how to use muskets.
Yeah.
You know, that wasn't the problem.
Right. Well, the thing is also, speaking on like Native Americans, it wasn't as easy as people think for the U.S. Army to take Native Americans out of the equation.
Yeah.
You know, you have tribes like the Comanches, the mm-hmm. Apaches, who were extremely resilient to mm-hmm. U.S. colonialization. And we oftentimes in history, we look back, we assume that the U.S. and these bigger nations just steamrolled through these, like, quote-unquote, less technologically advanced nations, when in reality, they actually repelled for quite some time,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah, and it's just, that's just been the way it's always been.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at throughout history, whether it's the Aboriginals, the Zulu, or Native Americans, you know, when someone like pushes you and being a bully,
yeah, I know.
You know, they're going to push back.
It, like, you know, the Scots against the English.
Yeah.
I mean, can we just list the amount of... So, it's can like, we it's just like list England
the amount of...
Rebellions against the English.
Yeah, against the English, but not only against the English, but against established, quote-unquote, nations that have just fell apart. Throughout history.
I mean, there is a laundry list of rebellions against British control, a British English occupation. Yeah. Like, you will never take our freedom.
Yeah, well, we did it. We're 13 colonies.
We did it. 13 colonies in the U.S. of A, baby. Don't you ever forget it. July 4th, mark your calendars. Independence Day. Well, I was talking to a guy, side note, but I was talking to one of the missionaries on the mission trip mm-hmm. in Nepal. He's from India. And
yeah.
I was like, oh, well, you guys have an Independence Day from the British, too. Because while we were in Nepal, we were celebrating July 4th. And so we were celebrating our independence from Britain. And it was funny because one of the other missionaries was from England. And then so us Americans, we were all celebrating Independence Day. And then
He's over in the corner just pouting.
Yeah, with his tea. Yeah. And then I was talking to the guy who's from India, and he's like, yeah, well, our Independence Day is actually in August. So, like, I'm like, oh, well, that's from the same nation. Like, how many people, like, got one independence from Britain? It's honestly crazy.
It really is crazy. So anyway, getting back on topic.
Back on track. Sorry about that.
We kind of do that from time to time.
We do that. We veer off, but we come back. Don't worry. We go on a rabbit trail, but we'll come back to get you.
So this Sir Shepstone is coming up with reasons why. So it's like, oh, they crossed the border, and there's an increasing number of firearms. They're going in their hand.
It's an uncanny impression.
Yeah, yeah. But also, there was another motive. Now, in the region of Natal, who is a Boer, or who was formerly a Boer nation, but now a British ally, found diamonds in the region.
Diamonds are forever.
Yeah. And so Britain is thinking, well, who are we going to use?
Right.
As the polite term, laborers, but the correct term would be slaves.
Yeah. Well, who's going to mine all these diamonds?
Yeah.
I'm sure as heck not going to do it.
Yeah. I'm too busy drinking tea.
Exactly.
And so they look to the Zulu, and they're like, 9 million people.
Right.
9 million slaves. I mean, let's just be honest here.
Right, right.
Also,
this is quite an opportunity.
Also, in like I said, Natal was a Boer nation before taking over, or before being taken over by the British.
Right.
And the Boer had laid claim to a large little piece of Zulu land.
Oh.
So boom. That's all they needed to invade.
So that's their reasoning.
That's their reasoning, yeah.
Because they conquered the Boers, and the Boers had land in Zululand.
Yeah.
So that was really their reasoning for invading. They just were like, "Oh, this is technically our land too." So
yeah,
in a way,
basically. So
let's get into the action.
So on December 11th, 1878, the British sent an ultimatum to the Zulu. They're like, "Hey, you know, lay down your arms."
Right. Bad idea.
And yeah, it was basically like 300 in South Africa.
Yeah.
He just kicked the envoy down an abyss. Yeah.
Kicked the envoy. We need to put a tally for dead envoys. Like, every time we talk about a dead envoy, we got to make a tally.
Yeah. So they sent an ultimatum. They're like, lay down your arms, disband your army.
Right.
It's going to be good. But to the Zulu, that was a big insult.
No kidding.
It's like, okay, this is our whole way of life. You're not just asking us to lay down our arms. You're asking us to dismantle our society.
That's an interesting point, because you don't think about that a lot when you think about imperialism. These big nations coming to conquer these lands, like, giving them some treaty, like, hey, give up everything that you've ever lived for,
yeah,
and everything will be fine.
Yeah.
It's like, are you kidding?
Yeah.
Like, who would ever agree to that?
Nobody.
Nobody. Nobody ever did. I mean, whoever really did.
Nobody who has a brain.
Yeah.
So, anyway, this Sir Henry is like, I know they're not going to accept it. I know they're not going to accept it.
I got a feeling they're not going to accept this.
So he just raises an army, and he's arranged this army to be led by Lord Clemensford.
Nice.
Lieutenant General Frederick Augustus is his name. Wow. Clemensford is like the, because you know how they always say that, like, Lord of,
that's like where he's from,
the province or something like where he's. Yeah, we don't really sound like historians right now, but bear with us.
Well, that's the thing. We're not historians. We are students of history.
Students of history.
And encouraging others to be students of history as well.
Yeah, so he's like, prepare for an invasion, dude. We're going to go in there.
Prepare for battle!
We're going to go in there, and we're just going to make these Zulu
Yeah. Bend the knee.
Bend the knee.
Yeah.
Pledge fealty.
Pledge fealty. And that does not go down well.
So he marches the army in there, and the British are expecting the Zulu to do like the Native Americans, hit and run tactics.
Right. Because they only have rawhide shields and then those half spears that we were talking about.
Yeah.
And so basically, that's what they got. And they're going to face the British head on.
Yeah, they're going to. But the Zulu are like, no, we're going to face these guys head on.
Bullets, no bullets. Just chewing up bullets.
It's going to be a throwdown. It's going to be the rumble in the jungle before the rumble in the jungle. Like, that kind of sounds bad, but now that I think about it. But
they're going to face them head on.
They're going to face them head on. This is their pride.
Yeah.
It's like, we're a proud warrior nation. Yeah, I get you're a proud warrior nation.
We're not afraid.
But we're not afraid of you.
Yeah.
You can bring guns. You can bring all the troops you want. You can bring artillery. It don't matter to us.
Yeah, I'll take a cannon shot. I don't care. But that's the mentality.
Yeah, that's the mentality, is we're not going to give up.
Yeah.
Our whole society is to protect our king.
Right.
And when our king says no, we're going to back him 100%.
Right, right, right.
So,
No doubt. No doubt, bro. So, what else do we got? So they get into... So, they face him head on. They get into some action, get into some engagements. Couple of them particularly detrimental to the British.
Mm-hmm.
I know one specifically where the Zulus just kind of overrun an encampment, and I'm not exactly sure how many British were lost.
Well, okay, the thing that you're speaking about is the Battle of Rorke's Ridge, which from between January 22nd and January 23rd of 1879, a group of Zulu numbering around 4,000 attacked a British outpost of Rorke's Drift.
Mm.
And the British only had 150 British soldiers plus a couple of colonial troops to defend this outpost.
Right.
And
so basically 300 Spartans versus the Persian, versus the entire Persian army.
And this whole encounter lasted 11 hours.
It's unbelievable.
11 hours. Now, prior to this, it's known as the battle. If I'm saying this wrong, please correct me, but I'm going to say it anyway.
Let it rip. Butcher it.
Isin Lawana.
That wasn't bad.
Yeah,
that's close.
Thank you. It's close, but no cigar.
It sounded good.
Yeah, it sounded good, and then probably some British person or some South African is gonna be like, "Okay, that's not how you pronounce that, you white."
That's not how you pronounce it, Jared.
You idiot.
So,
but this on January 22nd, January 1879, a Zulu force of 25,000 makes a surprise attack.
Oh wow!
And it's a river. In Africa.
Okay.
So they make a surprise attack, and they are completely routed.
The British
are routed. They got no answer.
So, and this is a campaign that's supposed to last 2 weeks.
Yeah, but it lasted six months. It's known as the Anglo-Zulu War. It lasted 6 months.
So the Zulus have been terribly underestimated.
Exactly. Terribly underestimated. Again, because like we were saying, I was like, oh, you're just going to use hit-and-run tactics. And I was like, no, we're going to face you.
They just got shields made out of paper mache. There's really nothing they can do.
Screw you, bud.
And then they just
face you straight in the eye, and we're going to throw down.
So they come out swinging, and the British take a shot to the jugular.
It's the worst British defeat in history.
Is it really?
And this news makes it all the way back to London, and people are shocked. Because back then...
So the Zulus
not
were making
my
a
words,
big...
but back then Africa was known as the Dark Continent.
Oh wow!
Yeah, so that's
a little
how, yeah, it's a little, little racist.
Just a bit.
Just a tad racist.
Just a tad racist. Even for the 1800s, that's a little grim.
Yeah.
So this news makes it back to London. So they're drinking their tea and they're like,
and people are shocked. They're like, what?
Yeah.
You know, a bunch of, you know,
indigenous
backwoods,
quote unquote, you know,
quote unquote backwoods,
right?
You know, to them,
routed a professional British army,
exactly, just routed them. Wow. And this goes on for 6 months. Yeah. They kick them out of Zululand.
Is that right?
Yeah. They're like. Eventually, Lord.
What did you say? They're like,
But eventually, Lord Clemensford has a replacement coming.
Okay.
And so eventually he retires. You know.
Yeah.
He's done with it.
Oh, yeah, he's like, before the war is over, Clemensford, the head of the operation, leaves?
The head of the army, he's forced to retire. He's getting like a bunch of pressure from Britain. Like, how could you? This was supposed to be an easy W.
Yeah.
What are you talking about, bud?
It's supposed to be an easy dub, man.
But
that was not the case.
That was not the case.
So they go back and forth. They trade blow for blow. And then the Zulus knock them out of Zululand.
Yeah. They do blow for blow. And this last, like I said, last 6 months. And
in that engagement at Rorke's, what is it called?
Rorke's Drift.
The 100 British soldiers actually
fended off
the 4,000 Zulus.
Yeah.
Despite the incredible losses, they fended off. And let's talk a little bit about... back then, you know, you had the muskets, the muzzle loaders, whatever you call them. And then it took about like a minute and a half to load.
Yeah. Well,
so they're fending off the Zulus, 4,000 of them, by doing what's called a volley fire.
Yeah, well... for a lot of years, it was muzzle loading muskets.
Yeah,
but then,
amen, brother.
Midway, about the beginning of between 1870 and 1880, firearms evolve. So, meaning that you had the self-contained cartridge.
And what's that?
It's you have your bullet on the end, then you have the capsule filled with gunpowder.
Okay.
And you just load it right in.
Okay.
To the rifle. And what the British were using back then was the Martini Henry.
Man, another Henry.
Yeah.
Hey-o.
If you ever played Battlefield 1, you got that like sniper, Martini Henry.
The Martini Henry.
Yeah, you'll know exactly.
It's my go-to.
Yeah, go-to.
My go-to with the Martini Henry.
But basically, it was just a trapdoor style of rifle.
Right.
You just loaded the cartridge right in there to the barrel of the gun, close it up, and you're ready to fire.
Okay.
However, it's a one-shot rifle.
And then you got to keep repeatedly putting the bullet in.
Exactly.
Okay.
But the British were very well adept at volley firing.
Right. So basically how that goes for the people who don't know
is one line of soldiers fires. And usually what they'll do is they'll kneel down and the next line will fire.
Right. And this is like a repeated fashion. You know, we were talking about the Mongols, not to get too off topic, but similar thing how I read how they would ride their horses out firing arrows at the enemy, ride them back firing arrows while they were riding away from the enemy too, and then have another group of horses as they were coming back past them and start firing, and they would repeatedly do that several times. It's kind of like a volley fire style-ish.
It's a way for somebody who has a single shot rifle or even bow and arrow
to add consistent fire.
Sustained fire. Even in warfare today, what you want to do is have sustained fire.
Yeah, even if
you can pin down your enemy.
Yeah, because even if you have a machine gun, you're going to have to reload. You got to reload any gun.
Yeah.
So someone's going to have to take, 30 seconds to get a magazine. I don't know. I'm sure they do it faster than that.
If they had an M16 back then, fully automatic, I think they'd still, they wouldn't really have a problem.
Yeah.
But that's kind of the way it goes when you have single shot rifles.
Yeah.
Is how do I sustain fire?
Right.
When I just have one bullet
in my
gun.
Yeah, and you actually see that in the Zulu movie, although it's not 100% accurate, but the way they're doing that volley fire during when they're trying to depict the Battle of Ork's Drift.
Yeah.
And then they show the volley fire, how they do that. And it's actually really interesting.
By the way, if you ever wanted to see Michael Caine in his youth with luscious blonde hair.
I didn't know he had blonde hair.
Check out Zulu.
I know. Michael Caine stars a young Michael Caine.
Yeah.
And their quest to...
At 100 yards, fire!
Does it always feel like this at the end when it's over?
Yeah.
You remember that part?
Yeah.
When the battle's over. Anyway, great movie.
But anyway, basically the ending of the war happens when the king... Oh my God, I'm going to butcher this.
Hit it. Give it a shot. Take a crack at it.
Ketsuayo. If I'm butchering that, please correct in post. Because I know I am. But he's captured and he's sent into exile. First into Cape Town, and then he ends up in exile in London. And he's known as the last king of the free Zulu.
Dang.
Eventually,
you're really pulling for him, though. I know.
You really want him to win and all this stuff. And
so they capture the king and, interestingly enough, exile him to Cape Town. And then after that, exile him to London.
Yeah. And then
I bet he stuck out like a sore thumb over there.
Well,
how do you go from Zululand to a place like London, you know?
Must have been a culture shock,
Talk about culture shock.
You know, it's like sending the Native Americans off to reform school.
Right. Yeah.
You know.
It's pretty crazy.
Yeah. But, he lives out the rest of his days in exile. And then Zululand is annexed and...
Still descendants of the Zulus today, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think that's so crazy. Can you imagine, like...
If you watch the movie Zulu, the guy who plays King, I'm going to butcher his name again.
Ketsuayo.
That's actually the grandson of the guy who actually fought, who was the king.
Dude, they did an insane, they actually had Zulus, playing the Zulus in the movie.
Yeah.
Which is kind of crazy. Like, what an ensemble.
I know.
Hats off to him.
Hats off.
So basically, that wraps up the story of the Zulus.
Yeah, as best we could.
As best we could. There's obviously...
there's some blanks. Most hardcore historians are like, I missed this.
Well, you know, we're not obviously detailing every single event. But
we're just here to entertain you.
Just here to give you a show.
Drop some knowledge.
So we want to leave time for some burning questions. Fire emoji. So, what's your take on imperialism? Good, bad? What are we talking here? Is it a sin?
I kind of think it was bad because
I'm thinking it's pretty bad.
If you kind of just left them alone.
Yeah.
And then eventually they discovered this resource. I mean, human nature is human nature.
Right.
I'm not saying that it would be like Wakanda perfect.
Yeah.
But I think they would have had a chance.
yeah,
to be wealthy countries.
I think that's such a great point, because you really think if Africa was not, you know, ravaged for their resources like they were, you wonder, you know,
they would have had a chance
if they would have, if you know, some places in Africa would have had more of a would have been more in a more better spot, because there's civil war breaking out,
yeah,
in a lot of different parts of Africa.
And, you know, talking about colonialism, China is coming into Africa and
right now,
yeah.
Well, they're trying to take Hong Kong back too.
Yeah, they're trying to take Hong Kong because Hong Kong is a British colony.
British colony.
They kind of got used to freedom. Something that the Chinese don't want you to have if you're a communist.
So basically, the other thing, I don't mean to,
yeah, go ahead.
I don't mean to rapid fire at you, but well, I mean, yeah, I would have to agree with you on the imperialism thing, you know,
because like if they were just like, if left alone, I mean, you know, I'm not going to say it would be perfect, but they would be in a better spot.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of these African countries don't even have an infrastructure.
Yeah. It is what it is. You know, can't control the past. We can only learn from it, right?
Yeah.
So I was listening to the memoirs of Ulysses S. Grant a while back.
Mm-hmm.
He took place in the Mexican-American War, stated it was one of the greatest displays of, or like one of the most negative displays of dominance from a stronger nation to a weaker nation,
mm-hmm,
that he had ever experienced.
Yeah.
And he didn't agree with the Mexican-American War, at least from what I read.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is, the question is, when we talk about imperialism and conquering these quote unquote weaker nations, do you think we've done an injustice to the Native American tribes, the Zulus, all these really warrior nations who fought so valiantly and so incredibly? Do we get it messed up when we think that,
well, the thing that
we
can
steamrolled through these,
the thing that I compare people it to is, everybody's talking about space travel. This is going to make sense in a minute.
Trust me. I was seriously, I was like, wait, what?
But space travel, and how, what if we came across a planet that had existing life, even at the microscopic level?
Yeah.
And then we just started drilling and setting up
oil
camp.
Rigs.
What
if we found
camp?
Oil on Jupiter?
Yeah, we can't land on Jupiter. It's a gas planet.
But okay. Yeah, actually, we can't land on Jupiter.
But like one of the moons of Jupiter, like Europa, it's mostly covered in ice.
Okay.
Right? And so what if we found even like microscopic life existing far below the ice?
Yeah.
Do we still go to colonize it?
Right.
Or the more ethical question is, do we colonize it, or do we just let that life be?
Right.
So that it can flourish.
It is a question of ethics in a lot of ways.
And the same thing happened, I find, with European colonialism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do we just go in there and take what we want when we want because we're stronger and think we're superior?
Leave the people in the dust.
Or do we, because that, you know, Rudyard Kipling's book, The White Man's Burden, talks about that. But, I mean, not from, like, a sympathetic view, but, you know, it's like, well, we're supposed to go in there and civilize the savages. This is our duty. This is our burden. And it's like, well,
he has a book that says that?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's called, forget what it's called.
The White Man's Burden.
The White Man's Burden, yeah. I really don't care much for it, but
interesting.
You know, it's like, but what if we just let that civilization be and let them become good, bad, or ugly?
Yeah.
Because maybe they could become something.
Right.
And a lot of the times, we don't even need to intervene.
That's true. And the thing
we
is,
find oil and diamonds and gold and
pretty
ivory,
things.
And we want some of that.
So the other thing is that I think is interesting, speaking about the United States and how we colonized America. Mm-hmm. When we were first colonies, we were under England, and we didn't like that.
We wanted our freedom.
We wanted our freedom, too. And we fought a revolution. We fought a war to be free from and be the United States. And then we turned around and became the very thing
we hated.
We fought to destroy.
Yeah.
I think that is insane. Like, that's like a crazy way of thinking, because it's like, I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know, you think like, is everybody... Would the weaker nations, if they were stronger, would they do the same thing to, you know, the nation who took over? You know what I mean? You kind of wonder.
I just think that there's an ego complex to it all.
Yeah.
Like, okay, we're a wealthy, civilized, sophisticated nation.
Kind of like that conqueror's mentality.
And we have to go in to this nation and give them all of the glories.
Right.
And it's the same thing when Britain conquered India. You know, they're like, oh, we'll give them schools and we'll give them transportation and
yeah,
libraries and all the wonders of technology. And
yeah,
they didn't get to use any of that.
Yeah. Go harvest some more indigo or whatever.
Harvest some more heroin.
can we sell it and push it
on the Chinese and blame it on them?
Can we harvest some rice so we can actually eat? No, I'm just kidding.
That's honestly a thing. It's called the Opium Wars.
The Opium Wars?
Yeah, you want to talk about the biggest drug cartel in history? Look no further than the British.
Look no further. It makes drugs.
The Chinese emperor at that time was like closed off his ports because he didn't want opium.
Oh, wow.
And so Britain was like, well, we have all of this opium and nobody to sell it to.
Right.
Open fire on your ports.
Yeah.
And we'll force you to open them.
Right.
And then that became the whole stereotype of, if you want opium, look to a Chinese person.
Oh, wow.
So.
Did you have any burning questions?
My burning question would be, what if the Zulus actually resisted the British?
That's right. That's a good one. Yeah.
And actually kick them out.
Yeah, we touched on that a little bit, but like, what do you think that nation would come to be? You know, would that? It probably would have been one of the great empires of Africa. You know, when you think of Africa, you don't really think of like empires and stuff like that.
It would have been. It would have lasted longer, I think. You know,
it definitely would have.
And just kind of shown the world. I mean, if they were able to, I mean, we talked about that battle, but if they would have kicked them out of South Africa entirely and take Cape Town.
Yeah.
That would have sent shockwaves
throughout
the world.
I mean, South Africa would be totally different.
Yeah.
That is really insane.
Because it's like, you know, like they have their culture, their society, you know.
Right.
But yet, we found.
We found diamonds, and Leonardo DiCaprio came into the picture.
Yeah, and then
for
he
blood
just kicked
diamond.
Everybody's ass. I was like,
but but anyway, without further ado, what do you think? You think we should wrap it up?
I think we should wrap it up.
Let's wrap it up. But so we hope you learned something new, and
hope you were entertained,
inspired,
about the, to
inspired.
Learn something.
Right.
We're not experts. We're just here to entertain you. We're just the monkeys in the circus.
We're just the monkeys in the circus. Yeah, we hope we encourage you to be a student of history. We really believe it can, you know, help you have a better outlook on things of today, and you see it every day. So without further ado, Jake and I are going to be signing off here, and I'm Henry Lowe.
I'm Jacob Lowe.
And why don't you check us out next time? We're on Apple. We're on Spotify. We're on anywhere you want to be, so...
Yeah.
Check us out.
We'll come to your house and do a live performance.
We'll come to your house. So, anyway.
We'll entertain the kids, the family, everybody. Bring grandpa, bring grandma.
Bring the whole fam. So anyway, without further ado, we'll see you guys next time. Thank you.
Bye.
Through some of the faces from the past.
bruised some of the faces from bruised some of the faces from the past. They're not that different from you, are they? Bruised some of the faces from the past. Bruised some of the faces from bruised some of the faces from the past. You've walked past them many times. They're not that different from you, are they? They believe they're destined for great things. Just like many of you, their eyes are full of hope. Just like you. But if you listen real close, legacy, the legacy, the legacy, the legacy. Come on, lean in. Listen.